This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Happy Wednesday. And that opening statement was correct. This is the Brad Sessmatt Show. There's only one thing wrong, as you'll see here in a second. It's not Brad Sessmatt. It's Jeff Munn for Brad Sessmatt, and that will be the case today and tomorrow. And we welcome you. There we are. Good morning. And Brad's taking a couple days off. Yours truly, Jeff Munn, ASU women's basketball, Phoenix Rising FC, wherever I can go with a microphone, that's where I go. And then and I do write occasionally too for this website, which is one of the things we're going to talk about, sort of. But we welcome you to this Wednesday on Sports360AZ.com, and we partner with AZ Central Sports. Lot to get to, as is usually the case. On this Wednesday, we are going to go a whole bunch of different directions. Tonight is opening night for the Suns down at Talking Stick Resort Arena. They take on the Portland Trail Blazers at 7. It is Portland, right? I keep saying Portland. I hope I got that right. It is Portland, and they take on the Trailblazers tonight, 7 o'clock at Talking Stick Resort Arena. And why would I even worry about whether I got the opponent right? Of course I know it's Portland. In any event, most of the obviously there's going to be a lot of activities, celebrations, what have you. Tip-off is at 7. Tim Kempton, our dear friend, Suns radio analyst, working with the Hall of Famer Al McCoy, will be with us a little bit later on in the show to kind of overview the Suns. We didn't get we don't want to get too much into the nuts and bolts of what kind of season is it going to be in terms of wins and losses, because I really don't think it's that kind of season. This is another step in the building process. An exciting young team with a lot of talent, and I contend, and I will continue to contend, that number one, while they may not win as many games as you want them to win, they're going to play hard every night, and I think fans are tolerant of going through a rebuilding if the team plays hard. And we'll discuss that with Tim a little bit later on. Cameron Cox from 12 News, who's with the Cardinals in London, England, will be with us to talk about what's going on there. I said England. Every time I hear London, by the way, Eric Sorensen with us this morning as usual, and he'll appear in the e-box here in just mere seconds.
Good morning. Hello.
Good morning, sir. Every time I hear the word London, I think back to the Austin Powers movie.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, I think he was an Air Force general, said, "Pack my bags, I'm going to London, England." And then about a couple minutes later, he's telling somebody with British intelligence, "Don't force us to bail you out the way we did in WW2. Anyway, I don't know what he's talking about.
The Cardinals are across the pond.
They are across the pond. And Cameron Cox, who's been there, I think I know that he and his photographer did not fly with the Cardinals, but they went on a commercial flight. But they've been basically there.
I think they got in Monday at some point, right around the time the team arrived.
So they've been to practices, and they've gotten a feel for what's going on in the city. And we'll talk with Cameron about a game that, and I mentioned this last week when I filled in. I know that when the schedule came out, the NFL probably said, well, this is a pretty good little game to put in there. The Rams are probably not going to be very competitive. So it's not really going to rupture anybody's season if we put this game on in London. Now, all of a sudden, the Rams are 4-2. The Cardinals are 3-3 off the big win over Tampa Bay. Adrian Peterson has energized the club. And all of a sudden, you're thinking to yourself, probably Bruce Arians and Sean McVay, they don't want to say it publicly, but they probably would have preferred to play this game in Los Angeles because it is a Rams home game as opposed to playing. It is a Rams home game, yeah. As opposed to playing it in London. But we'll get into all that. We have a few other things. I also have, and we'll do this later on in the show, ESPN has apologized for something. Ha-ha! Breaking news. And we'll discuss that coming up a little bit later on in the show. But let's get to the major news of the day. We'll start first in baseball. The Yankees with a magnificent comeback against the Astros last night in the late innings to beat Houston 6-4, tie up the American League Championship Series at 2 games apiece. And Game 5 is this afternoon, 2 o'clock Arizona time at Yankee Stadium. And obviously, the series now officially hangs in the balance in terms of what direction it goes. And I'm going to... what we saw last night was another example of something that I've kind of harped on in relation to the Dodgers and people's perception of the Dodgers, and I'll get to that in a minute. The other game last night in the National League Championship Series, the Dodgers behind Yu Darvish again, dominant over the Cubs, beating the Cubs in Game 3. I believe the final was 6-1. And they now lead that series 3-0. They go for the sweep tonight in Chicago.
That's really depressing me. It's just, I want to see
why
these.
Why? Because it's the Dodgers?
No, I just want to see. I love postseason baseball, and I want to see these series stretched out to. I have no dog in the fight. I could really care less about any of the four teams that are left. But I just want to. I don't want the NLCS to be over tonight.
I don't think it's going to be, okay. Although I will tell you this, that the thing that concerns me is now the Dodgers have a little added incentive for wanting to go out and finish this thing off tonight. 6-1 was the final of the Dodger-Cub game. I just went blank for a second trying to – I saw the end of the game. Anyway, now they are 6-0 in the postseason, Eric, and now to me I think they have the added incentive of saying, let's see if we can run the table and go 11-0. So while on one level you could say to yourself, if you're the Dodgers, okay, if we lose tonight, it's not the end of the world. We still lead the series 3-1. I look at it the other way. I think they're telling themselves, hey, let's see, you know, if we can really put on a run and get through this postseason unbeaten, that would cement a pretty serious place for us in history. So I hate to say it, but I think that's kind of what the Dodger thinking is at this point. They go with Alex Wood tonight against Jake Arrieta. That's one reason why I still think, like, look, I'm not going to be stupid here and say, oh, I think the Cubs can still win the series. I did pick them at the beginning of the year. I picked them at the start of the playoffs because I hate when people change their picks during the year. You know, if you said in March, if you said on opening day, I think it's going to be the Cubs against the Indians in a rematch, you stick with that until the X is by their name. And I did not pick a winner in the American League because I couldn't figure out who was really, in April, who was head and shoulders above everybody else. But I did say it was the Cubs' title to win or lose, and I'm going to stay with that until the Dodgers win that fourth game of this series.
The biggest storyline for me tonight with yes. that game is going to be monitoring Jake Arrieta's pitch count, because he has not been good this year about pitching deep into games, and the bullpen was, I don't know if they were taxed last night.
Well, they're taxed.
But Madden went through quite a few of those arms.
Yeah, and it strikes, it's odd and it's ironic in a way. They're going through the same problem that right now, Eric, that they went through last year, even mm-hmm. though they won the World Series. Madden, with each game through the postseason, has less and less confidence in the guys he has to use to get to his closer. Last year, you know, and it just drives me nutty the way Madden manages a game in the postseason. But he has to. He doesn't have that much confidence in his bullpen. And I think no matter what happens the rest of the postseason, could end tonight, I think Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer are going to have to go out and find some new bullpen pieces. And by the way, they don't have it in their farm system. So they're going to have to go out and find some guys they have more confidence in. By the way, I want to mention this too, just for a second, and I'll get through this as quickly as I can. I'm sick to death of people ripping Joe Madden about not using Wade Davis in Game 2 on Sunday. You do not use the closer in a tie game in the ninth inning on the road. If you got it this time, you don't use the closer. If the Cubs had scored a run, let's just say in the 11th inning, and they go up 2-1, or even in the 10th, they're not going more than an inning with Davis. Who closes? Who closes? You think Joe Madden has no confidence in his bullpen in the 7th and 8th? How much confidence do you think he's got if he uses Davis in the 9th and has to have somebody else try to close the game? Okay? Enough! Buck Showalter got criticized last year for not using his closer in a tie game in the wild card game. That's not what you do. You got to have him available to close the game if you get the lead. All right, I'm through yelling about that. Couple other things. Coyotes lost last night at Dallas. Let me just say this really quick. I'm watching 12 News Today this morning, and their male co-anchor, who I believe used to do sports in another market before he came to Phoenix, beat up the Coyotes a little bit at the end of his show, saying, when are they going to win a game? Listen, pal, look at that roster. It's very young. They're talented. Yes, they're talented, but they're young. This is a building hockey team. Get off their backs. It may take them a while to win a game, but nobody expected them to go to the playoffs this year. So you know what? I know you're frustrated. They haven't won a game, but they're not the Pittsburgh Penguins. This is a building hockey team. Give Rick Tocchet a little bit of an opportunity to sort out who can help him and who can't. And, you know, why you're spending a minute, you know, beating up the Coyotes because they haven't won a game? Seriously. You know, get off their backs a little bit. And ASU, I'll tell you what, we will get into the ASU situation a little bit later on the show because we're up against a break. I do think the win Saturday changes, potentially in a big way, changes the way ASU's season could play out. I think this Saturday at Utah is a huge swing game for Arizona State. Because after the win over Washington, yeah, it may not have been a dominating performance. Bottom line is they won the game. And now you see the improvement on defense. You see the way Manny Wilkins is handling the offense, and you say to yourself, okay, I feel a little bit better about their chances against Colorado, against UCLA. And yeah, against Arizona. I know Arizona's playing well, but that game is in Tempe. There's a football game in London this Sunday. Cameron Cox of 12 Sports is there, and we'll check in with Cam, get a feel what's going on in the city and how practices are going. That's kind of important, too, and we'll do all of that after a break. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jeff Munn for Brad. We're on Sports360AZ.com, and we partner with AZCentralSports.com. It is a Wednesday, the Brad Sesmatch Show, and Jeff Munn in for Brad. For those who don't know me, and there's a considerable amount of people who don't, I'm the radio voice of ASU women's basketball. I work with Phoenix Rising FC. I just get around town a lot. Let's just put it that way. There is a town across the pond that is staging an NFL football game on Sunday, London, England, and the Cardinals are there preparing for what now becomes a really crucial game in the NFC West against the Los Angeles Rams. And Cameron Cox from 12 News is there. I know his photographer's been sending out photos all the time on Twitter, and Cameron joins us now through the miracle of technology from London. First of all, if I do the math right, it is 6:23 in the evening as you and I are talking. Am I right?
Solid, Jeff. Solid, yes. And truthfully, I have no idea what time it is. Half the day.
Yeah, I bet.
I had fruit, chips, a cinnamon roll, and a Mountain Dew. So my body doesn't know what to eat. I'm tired. I feel like taking a nap right now when I should be wide awake. It definitely takes some getting used to when you travel 8 time zones and just kind of hit the ground and start running. But it's fun. Love London. Great city. But it is a little weird adjusting to the time and then communicating with your office, who's 8 hours behind you. So that's always fun.
Yeah, no question. Let's talk about let's get right in on the football aspect of this. First of all, the practices, and I can imagine that the coaches are kind of conflicted. They don't want to push the guys too hard given the time change and the effects on the body clock. But if you had to describe the intensity level of the Cardinals' practices so far, how would you describe them?
So far, pretty light. They've done 2 walkthroughs. Normally Wednesdays are a mixture, depending on how tough the game was the day before, or the Sunday before, is either a walkthrough or they kind of actually get after it a little bit. But this one today was a walkthrough. I know when they arrived Tuesday, BA did not want them going straight to sleep off that long flight. He kind of wanted to get them on a normal schedule out here in London. So the first thing they did when they landed here in London, he took them straight to basically kind of a somewhat practice field. There was a castle in the background, a field of cows right behind them, and they just had a light stretch, a walkthrough, some meetings right after that. And then today they had some meetings in the morning. They went to practice here in the afternoon. Again, another light walkthrough, nothing really heavy. I think they'll get after it tomorrow and do a little bit more than they usually do on Friday. So it's been kind of light so far. I just think I did talk to a few of the players. Even though they kind of say it's a business trip and they're definitely just focused on football, a lot of them kind of say, hey, Cam, I'm not going to lie, I am a little bit tired. It is a little, weird with the time change. So I'm sure their bodies are feeling it a little bit today, which is why BA is not probably kicking into high gear just yet. My guess Thursday they're really going to get after it. The Rams will not be here until Friday. They're staying actually in Jacksonville, mm-hmm. Where they played their last game. So advantage, at least my point of view, Cardinals so far, because they got here earlier in the week. I don't see how the Rams can wait that long to get here. I mean, it takes your body at least 2 days to get adjusted to the time zone. So Cardinals are here. Rams will get here. Rams will get here until Friday.
That's a great news nugget, because I just assumed they were there. Cameron Cox from 12 Sports live in London joining us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. So the Cardinals pretty much have the city to themselves in terms of the attention from the media. And I don't know if I necessarily want to focus in on the way the London media is approaching them, but obviously, a lot of attention, whether it's London writers, you guys, is on Adrian Peterson. And we noticed the energy level of this team, in particular the way Larry Fitzgerald reacted on Sunday. I would assume that even with the travel and the fatigue and the adjustment in time zones, that the momentum or the energy they got off Adrian Peterson's presence on Sunday, that it's still there. That momentum is still rolling.
Oh, no doubt, especially with him being named Offensive Player of the Week. That was just announced today for his performance against the Buccaneers. That was really the main talking point today at practice throughout the entire media, even the London media. You know, this is AP's, or AD, I should say, because they call him all day. This is his second trip to London this year. He came earlier with the Saints. Now he's back again. So, of course, the London media were asking about that. But they were also asking about his performance, and that was really the topic among BA, Patrick Peterson, Carson Palmer, you know, all the guys, just about the lift that he's given this team, the ability they've been able to now run the football. They can do the play action pass. I mean, BA was kind of smiling when you asked him, hey, does he make you a complete play caller now? And BA kind of basically said, hey, I could use both sides of my play sheet moving forward. So he has no doubt given this team a second lifeline. You don't want to really say they were dead in the water, but they were definitely treading that way, you know, for the first part of the season, not being able to run the football. You know, BA's offense is just going to shrink when they can't play action pass. So he's given this team a life, a new confidence, as Carson Palmer said. And we'll definitely love to see it if they can put 2 weeks together that this Sunday.
Well, you mentioned BA, and I think you bring up a good point, and it was obviously evident on Sunday that just the threat of Adrian Peterson and the kind of game he had against Tampa Bay, the Rams certainly are going to respect what Adrian Peterson can do with the ball in his hands. It was obvious Sunday that he bought Carson Palmer a lot of time to just sit back in the pocket and find the guys downfield that he's been looking for all year, but hasn't had the time to find them.
And you know, when you say a lot of time, I think people think of that as like 3 or 4 seconds. No, a lot of time is just like he needed a second and a half more, or maybe a half a second more, just to be able to get the ball out to one of those guys downfield. And I think that's what you saw on a numerous passes to Larry Fitzgerald down the field, where the safeties would just step down. They'd take one more step towards the box, and that step would hurt them down the field, you know, to Jerron Brown, to John Brown. It just opened everything up across the board. So now that the Cardinals actually have some type of threat in the backfield, I definitely know the Rams are going to have to respect that too as well. Now, the Rams are a much better defense than the Buccaneers. They have a great front seven, some good names in the back area too as well. So the Rams will definitely be more of a challenge. They're a more complete team, believe it or not. I know that's weird for people to hear, especially in our era, that the Rams are actually a good football team. Yes, they are a good football team. This week will definitely be more of a challenge. I definitely think people will be able to gauge what type of teams this Cardinal team will really be moving forward against a good football team like the Rams, especially on the road. They don't play well going east. They've shown that. I believe they're 1-8 in their last 9 trips where they go east of Phoenix. This is obviously way, way east of Phoenix. So the Cardinals have shown recently they've not played well when they travel east. So if they can kick that trend and then continue the trend they started last week against the Bucs, who knows what this season will hold for this team.
And especially since the NFC now is kind of a grab bag. Cameron Cox from 12 Sports joining us from London. Bruce Arians is never going to say it out loud, but you're with him a lot. You can read between the lines on a lot of things that he doesn't say. I would get the feeling that, especially now, given the what's at stake in this game, that there's a part of him that wishes they weren't playing it in London. I know he'll never say it, but do you get that sense when you talk to him?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, sometimes you can joke with B.A. about certain things. You can bring up some lighter things with him, and he'll give you one of his classic B.A.-isms or a great line. As we say in the TV business, he's a soundbite machine. He always says something that'll make you laugh just in general. Today, you know, we tried to joke with him about London a little bit or just bring up some London questions. And he just, to me, had a very business-like attitude to him. And not to say he was in a bad mood, not to say he was angry or anything like that, but he just seems all about business on this trip. And I was talking with some of the other media guys, and we kind of all agreed. It's like he is going to be the you know, more so than the head man this week, the level-headed guy this week. He wants to make sure that all his players see that, hey, he's keeping focus on the prize right now, and that's possibly maybe being tied for first place in the NFC West if they can pull out this win. He knows they've not played well when they travel east whatsoever. Trust me, if anybody knows, it's Bruce Arians. He knows how well his team played last week, what he can do with this team moving forward, especially down the road whenever they get David Johnson back. So I really think it's important for him personally to keep that face, you know, stonewall cold, make sure his players know that this is not a sightseeing trip. He dropped a great line today that basically said, hey, if you want to get, you want to see the sights, come back in March.
Yeah,
you
right.
Take care of this Sunday. So if anything, I just think it's all business for BA this week, and that's how he wants to keep it. He was very complimentary on London, the facilities, the fans. So he said all the right things. I bet he would probably wish, I think most players would probably wish it was closer to home in Phoenix, that way they didn't have to travel and all this to begin with. They don't mind being here whatsoever. But they understand the magnitude of this game. And once you get past all the hoopla and everything else that goes along with a game and a so-called event like this, it is a huge game, first place on the line, to put together back-to-back wins. We've always said all season, this team has got to put together a winning streak at some point in this season if they want to achieve any of their goals whatsoever. This can be the start of something really special, especially after what happened last week.
I got about 30 seconds. One thing that I have not heard out of London, what's the weather going to be like Sunday? Because it's obviously a lot different than Phoenix. And if it is if it is rainy, and it does get rainy there quite a bit, having an Adrian Peterson in a running game is really going to be important. So what are you hearing about what kind of conditions they're going to have Sunday?
Who knows? I don't know how the weather people in this country actually predict the weather because it's just so unpredictable. It rained today when I was told it was not going to rain, but coming into this week, I was told it was going to rain all week. The weather today, I think they're expecting kind of a similar what we saw today. Sprinkles throughout the day, could clear up throughout the afternoon. It is a grass field. The field could be a little wet. The Cardinals did practice on a wet field today. So they'll be prepared for any type of situation. The grass they practice on today at a rugby facility is the exact type of grass that will be at Twickenham Stadium. So they'll have all that down by the time we get to Sunday. But, you know, as people tell me in London all the time, hey, it might rain, might not rain, but I would guess it would rain. Just a little bit at some point throughout the day.
Yeah, I would agree. Cam, appreciate the time. Safe travels coming back home after the game on Sunday, and I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
No problem. Thanks a lot, buddy.
You got it. Cameron Cox, 12 Sports. They're there, of course, covering things. Our friend Kent Summers with AZ Central. Dan Bickley's there. So everything's going on in London. You got it covered if you stick around with AZ Central Sports. That's who we partner with here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Sports360AZ.com, AZCentralSports.com. And we're going to talk Suns with Tim Kempton next. Opening night in the NBA for the Suns, of course, as they take on the Portland Trail Blazers tonight at Talking Stick Resort Arena. And to preview the season and talk about the NBA in general, we're pleased to have with us this morning my old buddy Tim Kempton, who, by the way, I'm watching this ESPN film a few months ago about the Miami-Notre Dame football scuffle, and Tim Kempton is a prominent star in that film, and I'm sure he knew that. You did know that, right, TK?
I didn't know it before it, Money, but when it came out, I was quickly aware of it. But before, no, I had no idea. And Money, by the way, I thought this was the NAU Lumberjack football mid-season report.
No, that's a little bit later on. We'll do that next week. I do have a football question for you, but I need to get to basketball first.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
I look at this team, the Suns roster, and I think to myself, no, let's start with the fact that you've got a guy in Josh Jackson. I've been excited about this young man since the second they announced his name at the draft, because I think, among other things, tremendously talented, great athletic ability, but he also adds, and I want to be careful how I say this, he plays with a chip on his shoulder. They said that the night of the draft. I think that's something this organization has needed for a long time.
Yeah, it does. And the other thing is he fits a need. You know, on draft night, you're always worried, do you draft what you need? Do you draft the best player? Well, the nice thing with Josh Jackson, you know, when they drafted him, I thought he filled both needs of someone that was probably the best kid left on the board, and also something that they needed, a tough defender on the perimeter with athleticism, and yeah, someone that plays aggressive, plays hard. We saw a little bit with Marquise Chris last year. His was a little bit, you know, too risky, where I think Josh Jackson plays with that chip on his shoulder in a smarter, more effective way. Now, I think Marquise will improve, definitely, you know, from that technical standpoint. But you're starting to see, you know, Marquise Chris, now Josh Jackson, Devin Booker, you know, even plays with a chip on his shoulder. You heard comments last year. He did not like losing at all and was very upfront about it, talking about taking care of, you know, our building or his building at Talking Stick Resort Arena. So it's one of those nice things, those intangibles that you're starting to see up and down the lineup with the personalities of those three guys I just mentioned.
I'm glad you mentioned Booker too, because the times I've heard him in interviews, he comes off very respectful, respects the game, respects the history of this franchise, understands his role as a community ambassador for this team. But with the 70-point game in Boston last year, it really seemed like the nation, finally, they started paying attention to Devin Booker. I get the feeling this year is really going to be a breakout year. It's strange to say that about a guy that has already accomplished as much as Devin Booker, but I still use the phrase, this could be a very big breakout season for him.
Yeah, it could be. You know, you want to see that consistency, you know, from the year. Obviously, very good scorer. Now has to bring it, you know, every night. The Suns have to count on him for 20, 21, 22 points a night. And if anything, in a more efficient way this year, you'd like to see his shooting percentage numbers go up. Continue being aggressive, going to the basket and getting to the free throw line, scoring points there, putting the other team in difficulties defensively. So those are the areas that you'd like to see him, you know, in your words, break out and become that all-star caliber guard at that two position.
Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, who embarks on a new season tonight, new regular season, as the Suns host the Portland Trailblazers at Talking Stick Resort Arena. This is an interesting year, too, I think, Tim, for Earl Watson, in the sense that when he took over, there was an awful lot of emphasis on reestablishing a culture, a philosophy. And now I see him kind of transitioning into more of the teaching, the basketball X's and O's, and I'm not suggesting they weren't there before, but I think there's going to be more of an emphasis, and you're closer to it than I am, that Earl's going to be more of, we're going to focus more on the X's and O's of the game. Am I seeing that correctly?
Well, in a sense, you know, you're still the youngest opening night roster in the NBA, so, you know, you're always teaching. You know, especially X's and O's at this level, you know, now it's the progression, as you said, you know, in the sports world, Jeff, you're always measured by wins and losses. And we already know this is going to be a very difficult year in the matter of wins and losses for the Phoenix Suns. So, yes, I think what you're getting at is we're going to have to see some progression in other areas with this young group. Are their offensive sets effective night in and night out? Is he making changes on the floor? Is he and his staff making changes at halftime in their sets, both offensively and defensively? Are they double teaming a guy that had a great first half? Are they mixing their defenses up? Maybe putting different guys out there, different lineups. So with the idea that the expectations of this team isn't going to advance in the wins and losses column, yes, for Earl, the progression has to be there in his team. Last year, giving up 113 points as a team, that has to get better from a coaching standpoint. Guys' togetherness, are they making progress offensively with more assists on the floor? Not a lot of wasted possessions from an X's and O's standpoint.
You know, this also, we talk about the youth on this roster, and it goes to a theory that I've had for a long time, and it's through my own experiences with teams that were really young. I've always believed fans will be, they'll be patient and they'll be understanding, and they won't give a team a hard time if they know that team is playing hard. Young teams always play hard. It's the youth, it's the energy and what have you. And I know that there are concerns, you know, how are the fans going to respond to this building process? I still contend that if this team plays hard, and I know it will, the fans will be okay with it. You won't see the fans turn their backs on this team.
No, and the thing that you have to remember, the Phoenix Suns basketball fans are pretty knowledgeable. You know, everybody talks about, oh, East Coast and New York Knicks fans are the most knowledgeable in the league and this and that. You got to remember, this is, you know, an anniversary year, 50 years in the Valley. A lot of people have grown up with the NBA. It was first, you know, professional sports franchise here in the Valley. So it is a knowledgeable fan base, which is always fun, you know, when you're out and about talking with these people. It's just not pie in the sky and craziness that you're talking about when you're talking with fans. So to your point, I think you're right. They definitely want to see progression. But it starts with going out there and giving an effort every night. And that, I don't know why we look at that as such a positive event anymore, Jeff. Isn't that supposed to be expected? You're a professional athlete.
Yeah, that's true.
Level.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not trying to poo-poo your theory or come down on these athletes, but, you know, when we sit here and talk about, well, if they bring in, aren't you supposed to bring in effort every night? Aren't you supposed to play, you know, aggressively and find it? I mean, it's only 82 nights a year. You're being paid handsomely to do something that you love. Wouldn't you give it your best effort every night? And I'm not trying to be, you know, a downer on the subject, but sometimes that kind of strikes me the wrong way.
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying completely. Let me turn the focus. There was one player I also wanted to get a thought from you from.
Sure.
On, and that's Eric Bledsoe. We've heard a lot of talk about the young players. Where does Bledsoe, as you've seen him through preseason and training camp, where do you see him fitting into this mix?
Well, he's the leader. I mean, Eric Bledsoe has the ball in his hands the most. And it's hard. You know, everybody, we've had Kevin Johnson, we've had Steve Nash, you know, and those are the people that he's getting compared to, and those guys were outright leaders. You know, they were very vocal. You could see them on the court putting guys in the right place. Eric's just a little bit different. I've always been a fan of Eric Bledsoe since he's been here. He's a leader. He's just a leader in a different way. I'd love for him to have another great year, because if he has a great year, the Suns are going to have a good year. You know, scoring the ball, and you got to understand, Eric is a scorer. He's not a pass-first guy, so his scoring is going to set up the team as well. So we need him to be aggressive alongside of Devin Booker in the backcourt.
Okay, I got about 2 minutes left. I want to hit two more things before I let you go. That guy you work with on the radio, I listened to him in the preseason. He's better than ever. I mean, I'm amazed. I've always said anybody, and I do a little bit of play-by-play myself, anybody that thinks they can do it the way Al does it, then why don't you just say you can play golf like Jack Nicklaus, too, while you're at it?
Exactly. He's a professional with all the years of experience. Not too many people can say they've worked with a Hall of Famer their entire career. Going on 15 years with Al, and it's a joy for me every night.
Lastly, you are a Notre Dame alum. There is a football game in South Bend Saturday. Do you understand that if Notre Dame beats USC, the Pac-12 is virtually destroyed for the college football playoff? Don't you feel bad about that at all?
Not one second. Especially it couldn't happen to a nicer group of people and fans in Southern California. But take your whooping and go home.
Hey, listen, a win and you guys got to be. Notre Dame only has one loss, right?
They only have one loss. So they still got a lot of great games though. North Carolina,
right?
In the top 20. You know, you got USC. Obviously, they've got the seventh toughest schedule in the country. So if they went out with one loss, and Georgia looks better than everybody anticipated. So a Notre Dame team with one loss to Georgia looks pretty good.
Yeah, they gotta be in the discussion somewhere. Hey, good luck this season.
Way to go, though, a lot of games.
Well, yeah, that's true. Listen, good luck this season. Safe travels. Say hi to Al for me. I'll get down and see you as soon as I can down at the arena. Say hi to all my friends down there and enjoy the season upcoming. And looking forward to hearing you on the radio, my friend. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Look forward to it, Money. Go Lumberjacks.
Okay. There you go. Go Irish, I think. I'm a Pac-12 guy.
Yeah, we'll go Irish, but I got more involved in the Lumberjacks right now.
Okay. All right. That's right. So be with us for the Lumberjack segment later on. Take care, TK. See you soon.
See you, Money.
TK, Tim Kempton joining us for a few moments. I'm partial. I'm going to be listening to the radio tonight because Al McCoy is something special, and he and Tim are terrific together, and we always enjoy the visits we have with Tim here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. On a Wednesday, we want you to stay with us as we continue on this Wednesday morning. Brad Sesmatch Show, we're here on Sports360AZ.com, and we partner with AZCentral.com. A little bit later on, talk to the Lopes at just after 11. Haley Stesiak and Jordan Hamm will visit with Grand Canyon head men's swim coach Steve Schaefer. And then after that, they'll be back, Haley and Jordan, for the Friday night 360 AZ preview show. So there's a lot to look forward to here at sports360az.com, and we want you to stay with us. azcentralsports.com partners with us as well. Two things I wanted to get to. I'm going to do the first one really quick, and it's about what I said earlier about the Dodgers and Yankees. The next time I hear somebody say the Dodgers and Yankees do it all with their checkbook, I'm going to scream. Look at their roster. There are very few free agents on either one of those rosters. And a lot of their contributors right now are guys out of their farm system. And the Yankees have been on the record as saying, we're trying to get under the luxury tax threshold. So it's not all free agency. All right, 2 minutes very quickly. ASU, I said it before, the Utah game I think becomes a huge swing game in their season because if they win that, you're looking at an 8-win season at least. I feel better about their chances against Colorado, UCLA, Arizona, and I think they'll give USC a pretty good football game too. And they should win at Oregon State. So to me, Utah is huge. Here's the story, and I've been dying to get to this all morning. We have been talking for the last couple of weeks. I wrote a little bit about this and talked about it last week, about ESPN and the way they treated the University of Washington a week ago, the prior Saturday to this last one. When they played against California, Chris Peterson's complaints about late-night games. He never specified ESPN, but they beat him and that program up really good on game day and during that night's game against Cal. The Seattle Times reports this morning that Washington Athletic Director Jen Cohen received a call last week from an ESPN executive apologizing to her for the way her school was treated during that game, including Quint Kessenich laying out 3 cupcakes on the sideline to talk about Washington's non-conference schedule. She said the ESPN executive told her the situation has been dealt with and it will never happen again. That's a direct quote in a column today in the Seattle Times. This is, I know that they've rectified this in this respect. Mark Jones and Rod Gilmore, who announced that game, have been moved to ACC games the last 2 weeks. So it sounds to me like Jones and Gilmore were told, you're off the Pac-12, because they individually beat up Chris Peterson pretty good during that game telecast. And I think all three of those guys and that crew were pushed off Pac-12 games as a result of the way things were done on that Saturday night. So I'm really glad. I applaud ESPN for acknowledging that they did something wrong. I respect them for dealing with it, and I respect them for calling Jen Cohen and apologizing for it. I honestly did not think they would do that. Good luck to the Suns tonight as they open their season against the Portland Trail Blazers. It's a young team. It's gonna be a rough go. They're going to have growing pains. But I've always said, when a young team plays hard, fans will be patient. They'll understand. They'll applaud. In 2004, when the D-backs lost 111 games, had all kinds of injuries, and were literally playing guys out of AA, nobody ever booed because they played hard every night. And that's what the Suns will do. And we'll see what happens starting tonight. Stick with us here. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with AZCentralSports.com, and we really appreciate you spending time with us.
Well, each and every Wednesday, Sports360AZ talks to the Lopes, and this week, Jordan Hamm and Haley Stasiak are here with head swim coach Steve Schaefer. Coach, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. At first glance, when looking at your roster, you see plenty of Arizona athletes, but then you go down the list and you see swimmers from Egypt, Bulgaria, Lithuania, the Ukraine, Zambia, plenty of other countries. Can you take us through what it's like to recruit such an international roster?
Well, it's a lot of fun. We've got, I think, something like 16 countries represented now, and it's kind of really cool to bring a group of such a diverse group of kids together and have them work together towards a common goal. I get to travel all over the world to major international competitions to watch kids and to coach kids at various meets, and it's just been a great experience overall.
You have six or seven swimmers between the men and the women from the country of Egypt. In football or basketball, you always hear about creating recruiting pipelines to states or regions within the country. But how does one go about building a pipeline to Egypt?
Well, first of all, I answered an email to a young man who was late in the recruiting process, wanted to go to a D1 school, and it was the first year of the transition. And so he reached out to us. We didn't have any money to give him, but he was able to pay his way to come here. And when I told him he could come, he mentioned that he had a twin brother. So they both came. They did really well. And I went back to their nationals for 2 years in a row. And that started up a whole cycle of kids getting interested in coming here.
You traveled down to Rio for the 2016 Olympics with Jade Howard, who swam for Team Zambia. What was that experience like?
That was one of the bucket list experience of a lifetime. I probably wanted to be in the opening ceremonies of the Olympics since I was about 11 years old, watching my first Olympics on television, and hoped to get there as a swimmer. Wasn't that good. Hoped to get there as a club coach. Didn't have quite the right athlete, and had pretty much given up on that opportunity. And then my phone rang one day, GCU called, and that opened up a whole nother set of opportunities. And it was a thrill, and it was a great experience for Jade just to go down there and swim lifetime best down there. It was a fantastic experience for both of us.
Talking to GCU head swim coach Steve Schaefer. Coach, you're already off to a strong start. The men in their opening meet placed first, and the women placed third. How important is it for the team to get off to such a strong start and continue to push expectations?
It's really important, especially in a year where we have really high expectations for both teams overall. And actually, although the men, you know, were first, the women had the better meet of the two teams. They had a little tougher competition, but they really outperformed the guys, and we're looking for our guys to really kind of pick it up in our meet coming up this weekend, and for the women just to keep building on that. The last meet was just 9 women and 9 men. Now we'll have our full team, and we'll see what we can do.
Mark Nicolai was named WAC Swimmer of the Week last week. He had 4 individual wins and 2 relay wins at the FIU Fall Classic. How is he a leader on this team, and what are your expectations for him this season?
Mark is a very quiet leader who leads by example. He's a fine young man. We were really lucky to get him here at GCU. He would have gone, had we been eligible, to the NCAA championships, both as a freshman and a sophomore. In all likelihood, he would have scored in NC2As last year had he been able to go based on the time he put up at the WAC championships. We look to him this year to potentially be GCU's first Division I All-American and to be a scorer along with other guys and lead maybe a relay there that'll score for us as well. He's a really talented young man, about, you know, in the top three or four in Russia, so he's a player for the Olympics in 2020 for Russia.
Pietro Hufnagel-Toscani on the diving side was the first GCU athlete to qualify for the postseason. What sort of pride do you take in having that accomplishment come from the swim and dive program, and how do you build off of that?
Oh, well, we take a lot of pride in things like that. It's, there's a whole lot of great sports at GCU, and we've always kind of been trying to push to be one of the best teams on campus and try and be the first among many, and that was a nice first for Pietro. And I take absolutely no credit for anything the divers do. We have a great diving coach in Tracy Eldridge, and she's done a fantastic job both in recruiting and helping Pietro improve. That's a first step for Pietro. That gets him to NCAA zone championships in March, and then he'll have to qualify for NC2As out of that, but we think that he can do that.
With all GCU sports having their first year of Division I eligibility, is there any excitement for your team coming into this season as you get there to potentially have that championship on the horizon?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, we've been waiting for this opportunity. We're probably the only team on campus that can say for sure over the last 4 years of the transition, each year we could have been there if we'd have been allowed to go. So we finally get our chance to show what we can do. It's important to us as a team. It's important to us in terms of our national standing. We think the men, you know, can, if things go well, the men can land somewhere between about 25th and 30th at NC2As in our first year there, and that would be a huge accomplishment.
Finally, Coach, it's an exciting time for the entire athletic department over at GCU. How have you seen this department come together as the Lopes transition to Division I?
Well, we've all faced a common challenge over the last 4 years, and although there's been some changes as we've gone through those 4 years, we've all embraced the idea that we want to try and be top 25 in everything we do, and that we've accepted the challenge of coming out of the gates and trying to get as many programs into the NCAA postseason in the first year to make our mark and to show that GCU is prepared for that challenge. And everybody just kind of gears together and cheers on everybody else.
Thanks so much for the time, Coach. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that was GCU swim coach Steve Schaefer.
Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.